This exhibition of barbarity was witnessed by over 200 onlookers. In a second instance, Dutch submarine officers in waiting were made to suffer what they described as 8 hellish days of third degree. This no doubt conforms to the much vaunted Japanese military code of chivalry, known as Bushido, and is therefore only the more despicable. What are we to say and think of people who wage war in this manner? We can hope that they'll mend their ways. Maybe so. We can teach them. At the point of a bayonet. We can protest against their infamous conduct, but we can only be sure of our protests being effective if they take the form of bombs and shells and torpedoes delivered with unerring aim. This war is no boxing match to be fought in the Marquis of Queensborough. This is a total war, in which we must fight as implacably as those opposed to us. This is a fight to the finish. Our finish.
Or theirs.
Our men and their American comrades know that, and are ready to do their part. Workers in war industry, in the main, are doing their utmost to support the frontline troops. Those who still find excuses for hampering the war effort must decide that they too will help to keep Australia inviolate, or take the consequences. And listen in tonight at 9:30 to the official feature, The Jap as He Really Is. Tonight's talk is on the legend of Japanese invincibility. Remember, tonight at 9:30.
Japanese forces on the north coast of New Guinea are now being hammered by Australian and American aircraft. A dawn attack was carried out today against an enemy-occupied aerodrome at Salamoa. Hits were observed on the runway. Our aircraft encountered severe tropical storms over the target. Nevertheless, they pushed home their attack from a low level. Some of our planes had to dive through thick clouds before sweeping over the aerodrome. The attack on Salamoa followed a raid on Ley on Sunday by American heavy bombs, which dropped a big load of bombs from a height of 5 miles. Our correspondent says the tropical downpours along the coast of New Guinea, following the arrival of the wet season, are expected to hamper the Japanese seriously. Their withdrawal from the Markham Valley last week because of floods means that the Japanese are concentrated at Ley and Salamoa. They have a precarious hold on these points, and provide an excellent target for the Allied air forces. RAAF machines, which carried out a daring reconnaissance over Salamoa yesterday, beat off an attack by 3-0 fighters. The Advisory War Council met this afternoon to consider various problems of Pacific strategy, but no details of any decision were released. During the afternoon, President Haitong of the Philippines, accompanied by General MacArthur, called on the Prime Minister. The President was assured of Australia's active cooperation to help restore the Philippines, and President Caiphon said he hoped that a Commonwealth representative would visit his country when the war ended. The Prime Minister made it clear tonight that the regulations gazetted about holidays cancelled public holidays other than Good Friday, Easter Saturday, and Anzac Day. However, the regulations did not make these 3 days public holidays, or forced them to be observed as public holidays. There was nothing, for instance, in any Commonwealth regulation to make butchers or bakers or other people who usually work on Easter Saturday work or not work on Easter Saturday this year. In effect, the Commonwealth simply left it to the employers to decide whether they would give their workers a clear 3 days' break. The absentee provisions of economic organization regulations have been amended to this end. Householders who already have stocks of tea do not need to register with grocers for the ration tea delivery before Easter Saturday, originally announced as the last day of registration. The Minister for Customs said today that because of the Easter holidays, tea registration would be accepted after that day. Consumers will register for a period of 6 months. The Minister said that retailers would have to keep lists of customers. Cafes, boarding houses, and hotels where people other than permanent guests are served will also have to register. They will receive supplies of tea based on a fortnightly ration of 40% of consumption last year. Residents will register with the management. Hospitals and groups of consumers who have been used to buying from wholesale merchants will have to register with them. Mr. W.M. Hughes, leader of the UAP, addressed a gathering of presidents and secretaries of sub-branches of the Returned Soldiers League in Sydney today. He said Australia should abandon an insular outlook and view the war as a whole. Mr. Hughes used these words: "No one nation alone can vent the Axis powers. If the line is broken on any front, the enemy may win the war. It is our task to see that our line remains unbroken." The meeting was also addressed by Lieutenant General Gordon Bennett, who said Australians must be prepared to meet tactics adopted by the Japanese in Malaya. He said that in Malaya, noise won more battles than bullets. The meeting adopted this resolution: that following on the tradition of the ex-service men and women of the Great War, and the example of the gallantry of the service men and women in the present war, Australia expects that every man and woman, without regard to class, creed or party, shall do his duty in the spirit worthy of a free people fighting for life and liberty, and inflexibly resolve at all costs to keep Australia safe, white and free. Here is the text of the two messages received by General MacArthur, promising him the fullest support of United States labor. They are from the two great American labor organizations, the Congress of Industrial Organizations and the American Federation of Labor. The message from the CIO reads: "The Executive Board has unanimously directed me to convey to you and your gallant men our support in this great struggle for the freedom of humanity. The millions of our members working in the mines, mills and factories are proud to be associated with you in this great fight." General MacArthur replied: "I appreciate deeply your message. Labor has played a magnificent part in every great war our Republic has fought. Will do so again. I have complete trust in the mighty effort that I feel sure you will put forth." The president of the AFL sent this message: "We're behind you, General, 5 million strong. We solemnly pledge to invest $1 billion of our earnings to help maintain you and your fighting men everywhere. We further pledge that we will build for our fighting forces the finest and best war weapons the world has ever produced." To this message, General MacArthur replied: "Labor has never failed the Army or the nation. May God bless you all for your splendid patriotism." Customs and excise revenue for the year promises to be considerably greater than estimated. For the 9 months which ended yesterday, revenue was more than £2,700,000 greater than for the corresponding period last year. This is over $5.5 million above the budget estimate, which had allowed for a fall of just under $3 million for that period. And here are items broadcast in earlier bulletins. The Prime Minister issued a war communique today about the air war in the north. It says that 3 enemy planes have been destroyed, 10 probably destroyed, and 5 damaged during our raids on Copan and Bro, and the Japanese attacks on Darwin and Port Moresby yesterday and on Monday. We shot down 1 enemy fighter over Darwin yesterday and probably damaged another. We lost no planes. That was in the afternoon. Early in the evening, a medium force of bombs came over Darwin, but caused no damage. The communique gives details of the RAAF raid on Kupang yesterday. Six enemy planes on the ground were probably destroyed, and flying boats were damaged. One Zero fighter was shot down for certain, and a bomber possibly as well. At Ley last Monday, there were at least five direct hits on buildings from Allied heavy bombs. Four planes on the ground were probably destroyed. A Japanese bomber flew over Fort Moresby yesterday and crashed a few miles out with its wing shot off. The Supreme Commander of the Anzac area, General MacArthur, has congratulated the Minister for the Army on the plans for reorganizing the Australian Army approved by War Cabinet yesterday. General MacArthur said he was greatly impressed by the leading Australian officers he had met. The minister stated that suggestions made by General MacArthur for defending Australia and affecting the Australian Army would be considered immediately. Here are some decisions made by the War Cabinet yesterday. They were announced by the Prime Minister. Members of the forces on active service in Australia will be able to post their letters free. Articles over 4 ounces will have special concession notes. All members of the militia will be X-rayed for TB, and in future, recruits will be X-rayed before they are drafted to units. The state governments will be asked to exempt from income tax allowances paid to fighting men's dependents. The Commonwealth has already done this for federal taxes. And that concludes the Australian news.
Wonderful Overseas News, read by Heath Burdock. The new Pacific War Council in Washington is about to hold its first meeting. The United States Senate is considering a bill to mobilize small industrial plants for war production. Heavy Japanese losses are reported from Burma. Indian party leaders have not yet reached a decision about the British government's proposal. Moscow gives details of repeated German failures to capture the naval base of Sebastopol. In Washington, the Pacific Royal Council will hold its first meeting within the next few hours. The Council will have a big part in dealing with problems demanding consultation. This point was emphasized by President Roosevelt at his press conference. He added that there will be the closest cooperation between the combined chiefs of staff group, the Pacific Royal Council in London, whose function would also be competitive, and the new Council in Washington. President Roosevelt explained that India was not included in the new council because it was not in the Pacific, whereas China was considered to be in that war area. Asked whether General MacArthur's command included naval forces, he made it clear that in the Southwest Pacific, General MacArthur was supreme commander of the sea, land, and air forces. In London, many observers are of the opinion that the first meeting of the Pacific War Council in Washington today is one of the really significant meetings of the United Nations since the war spread to the Pacific. It is pointed out that the Council in Washington will maintain the closest contact with the Pacific Council in London. The United States Senate is considering a bill to mobilize 35,000 small factories for war production. Senator James Murray said that reliable witnesses have testified that at least 50% of the potential productive capacity of the United States was in small plants, and yet they were hardly being used. Amendments to suspend the 40-hour week and overtime pay was requested. Senator Barclay, the Democratic leader, reminded the House of President Roosevelt's unqualified support for the 40-hour week. Speaking in Cleveland, Ohio, the medical civilian defense director, Mr. James Landis, urged the speed up of civilian defense. He said no one can guarantee that the United States may not have bombing raids on a similar scale to those of Coventry and Plymouth. In Burma, Indian forces are in action against a Japanese vanguard 10 miles south of Prome, well ahead of the Irrawaddy Valley. The Japanese have suffered many casualties. 30 miles south of Prome, British forward troops are in action at Songbo. In the Satang Valley, Chinese reinforcements have recaptured a point 10 miles north of Tangu. The Chinese have readjusted their positions in this area, and a report from Chongqing says the Chinese forces have withdrawn from Tangu itself. This message adds that the enemy attack went on without interruption for 5 days before the Chinese forces were compelled to withdraw. Fighting is still going on in the outskirts of the city. In India, the two chief political parties have not yet reached a decision about the British government's proposals. The working committees of both the Congress Party and the Muslim League are still considering the details. Following last night's adjournment, the Congress Working Committee has reassembled, and the Muslim League Committee will meet again on Friday at Allahabad. Reports from New Delhi say it is believed that the Congress Working Committee at today's meeting will consider a plan drafted by Mr. Gandhi and Pandit Nehru. Earlier messages told how after the committee had adjourned last night, the President, Mr. Azad, declared, "Whatever may be our final decision, I can say with a full sense of responsibility that the members of the Congress Working Committee are of one mind with regard to Sir Stafford Tripp's proposals. We have thoroughly discussed these proposals in all their aspects and have reached the stage at which we are drafting our conclusions." According to messages from New Delhi, yesterday's meeting of the Congress Committee was mainly concerned with the question of the defense of India. At his press conference, Sir Stafford Tripp emphasized India's defense would remain Britain's responsibility until the end of the war. Referring to the British government's post-war plan for an Indian Union, the Stafford Cripps declared that under that plan, there would be no imperial troops in India and no protection of British capital and commercial interests. A later, unofficial report from New Delhi claims that the Congress Working Party has unanimously rejected the British proposal. Congress Party leader, Pandit Nehru, who previously pleaded for acceptance with reservations which were not acceptable to Sir Stafford Cripp, has now recommended rejection. The report adds that further negotiation is possible on the basis of Britain agreeing to accept an Indian member on the Defence Council. Today is the 150th day of the siege of Sebastopol. And the Russian war bulletin gives an account of Nazi losses in their unsuccessful attempt to take this important naval base. In their desperate efforts to take the base, the Nazis so far have lost 45,000 officers and men. After the failure of the first attack, they threw in 7 infantry divisions, many tanks and guns, 200 fighter and bomber planes. Again, the enemy failed. And now the Soviet bulletin reports that the defenders of Sebastopol are counterattacking and destroying the enemy's fortifications. The bulletin adds that the German 22nd Tank Division, recently transferred from France to the Crimea, has already lost more than 50 tanks out of 100 in a single day's fighting. There is little news of fighting on the other Russian front. The Red Army is attacking fiercely in the Donetsk region. Moscow says of the Kalinin front, northwest of the capital, that 34 places have been recaptured in only 2 days' fighting. But much additional raw material has been brought from that area. From London, there is news of how British and Russian naval units convoying supply ships to the USSR sank at least one enemy destroyer and damaged another, and also seriously damaged 3 U-boats. It is possible that the U-boats were sunk. The convoy bearing British and American supplies arrived safely at its destination. Tehran Radio last night praised the prompt measures taken by Britain and Russia to send supplies to Persia. The broadcast revealed that the Soviets had sent large supplies of flour to southern Persia, and that Russian ships had brought through several thousand tons of wheat and sugar from India to Persia. The Vichy Minister for the Interior, Monsieur Bouchot, has made another appeal for French unity and has called upon Frenchmen to form an unbreakable rampart behind Marshal Pétain and Admiral Darlan. A Vichy report says that Monsieur Bouchot declared that the restoration of French sovereignty and independence was the final essential condition for the unification of France into the European system. Berlin today quotes the Vichy message saying that Laval has left Paris after telling Pressman that his visit there was of a purely personal nature. Laval described rumors of his possible re-entry into the Vichy cabinet as a head of the pack. Following the arrest of 20 Japanese in southeast Brazil, it has been revealed that they built a special dock on a lonely part of the coast, and that the dock could have been used for refueling submarines. Huge quantities of petrol were stored near the dock. In another raid at Sao Paulo, 150 miles north of Rio de Janeiro, rifles and 400,000 cartridges. It is believed that one of the arrested Japanese, who appeared to be a farm laborer, is an army general. That is the end of the overseas war.
The Australian National Shortwave Station, BLG5, will now close down. Now here is the news for the Outback, and this is Norman Lee reading it. 300 yearlings have been catalogued for the sales in Sydney next Tuesday and Wednesday, but the Melbourne Herald's correspondent reports that not more than 250 are likely to enter the ring. That's because some studmasters have decided to keep a number of their fillies and not to send in any colt that has blemishes. One of the biggest drafts will come from Miller's Car Aura Stud, which will offer 54 yearlings. That, however, is only half the usual offering. There may be someone in Australia who knows the whereabouts of Joan Angela Howard, a 10-year-old girl from Java whose mother is now in Adelaide. Joan's mother, by a second marriage, is Mrs. F.J.W. Den Uden, and she's anxious to find her daughter, Joan Angela Howard, a 10-year-old girl. Mrs. Den Uden and her husband, a lieutenant in the Dutch Air Force, had to leave Bandung before they could get in touch with the girl, who was staying with friends 60 miles away. Mrs. Den Uden believes, however, that her daughter and friends left Java on the 2nd of last month, presumably for this country. She now asks anyone who knows where her daughter is to get in touch with her at the South Australian Hotel in Adelaide. There's news today of a new flying doctor night service. The idea is for the flying doctor at Broken Hill to provide a continuous medical service by radio to people living within 500 miles of the base. The Zinc Corporation has placed its ambulance staff at the service of the flying doctor so that messages can be received after the wireless operator goes off duty. At night, calls from federal radio stations will now be picked up at the company's works and telephoned to the flying doctor base. Following the heavy rains recently, householders in Sydney are now allowed to use their hot water services again. They may also use water in their homes throughout the day. These decisions were made today by the Water Board. However, it was stipulated that baths must not have more than 4 inches of water in them. Here is the Adelaide Advertiser's independent review of the cattle sales held at the abattoirs on Monday. The yarding was the heaviest since the Christmas market. Altogether, well over 1,800 animals were penned. Only 140 cattle came from the pastoral country, the consignment coming from Mr. E. Lowe and trucking at Marie. The source of supply was far north 140, north 675, south 290, and southeast 550. Local paddocks provided the balance. Now, very shortly, we shall be crossing to the national stations for the news commentary. This is your Australian National Shortwave Station, VLR. The time, 22 and a half minutes past 7.